The following program has been provided by the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project. For more information, call 1-800-735-0230 or log on to pacificaradioarchives.org.
None of the chicks here are going to go to jail because we don't have draft cards, we're not going to turn in, or that we are going to turn in. But I think we're getting away from the center because, well, it's a Indian word which I don't know and I can't pronounce. But I think that's basically why we're here. It's a matter of not so much resist the draft guys, but people, look what you can do as an individual. Guy, chick, you know, a guy who... Well, he has one leg, he's going to get drafted, but he's still a human being. And he has to know that he can emote that love and that peace and that feeling of brotherhood also. And I feel with questions about bombing bridges and cooling out of economic organizations that are making napalm bombs or helping to make them, is getting away from the center of what we are, why we're here. Are not only bombs, if those that are, you know, if he feels that's necessary to bomb, well, I think he also has to be turned on to the fact that the bomb isn't the answer, whether it's for a bridge or for a person. The fact that it's not for a person isn't important. The fact is that the bomb exists and the will to use it is there. And I think that's the question that should be under discussion.
I agree. I mean, we've only discussed those things.
A field slave, not a house slave.
I'd say I agree completely. You know, and I've only tried to talk about those things, such as resisting the draft, as expressions of exactly the thing you're talking about. The question was about conscientious objection. I think that the relevant political model for analyzing modern America is 1984. One of the things that's true about that system is it teaches people consistently to concern themselves with the content of their act, regardless of the context of it. You know, namely, let's say the guy at Lockheed, you know, he sits on the wing of an airplane riveting rivets. He never thinks that the rivets build an airplane, the airplane flies. When the airplane flies, it bombs people. I mean, he has one task to do. He does that task without any regard to how the tasks connect and what they do when they connect. I think the conscientious objector status is a very good example of that same mentality. It's you to declare that you personally don't want to carry a rifle, but that you're willing to do that in the context of a system whose sole purpose is to force people to carry rifles. So that, like, I was once going to be a conscientious objector, and I got that Form 150. When I started to fill it out, I got down to the three lines they give you to explain why you're going to be a conscientious objector. And I started to write them, you know, and I looked at what I'd written, and I said, that's exactly why I couldn't cooperate. And my objection was not simply to what act I personally was going to have to do. My objection was to the whole existence of a system that forced people into particular kinds of acts. And my objection was to the existence of military conscription itself, which meant that I couldn't cooperate. So that in a lot of ways, I consider myself simply to be more of a conscientious objector than the law allows.
What we tend to ask is, if you're going to be in jail for 3 years, don't you consider that pretty much a large hole in your life? 3 years in which you're not doing anything?
The question is, do I think that those 3 years in jail will be a large hole? I mean, you know, the place where I'm not doing anything in my life. I think that has yet to be answered. It's a question of what I do when I get in there. I mean, that's true, but being outside is being in the context of America. You know, maybe it may be impossible to distinguish between the two. I mean, but if you can distinguish with them, the way I always distinguish the jail from America is that the jail is so much more honest. I mean. Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure that one has the freedom to do something in outside society. I don't think the greatest danger to our freedom is people around us. I think the greatest danger to our freedom is ourselves. I mean, I took the step of setting my draft cards back over 2 years ago, you know, so that I could be free to do the things I wanted to do, because I couldn't do those carrying a draft card. You know, as long as in my life I gave recognition to that whole system, it was impossible to give recognition to the other things I wanted to give recognition to. So I had to choose between the two. I wouldn't call jail freedom, but I don't know that I'd call jail that much different than America. I mean, what I say is in jail, you know, the guards are guards, the prisoners are prisoners. The guards are called guards and the prisoners are called prisoners. And, you know, the big problem with it is it's so goddamn honest it may take a while to adjust to. You know, nobody calls the guards, you know, deans, principals, presidents, whatever. You know, the guards are called guards. And, you know, I'm not going to glorify jail. I'm just going to say, to do what I wanted to do, I had to put myself in that position. I would never take a draft card back. You know, I'd much rather spend those 3 years in jail than spend the time outside with a draft card in my pocket. I don't think...
David, let me say one thing. I think, if you accept, which you may not, the view that that's probably the best way to arrange a real revolution, that you may end up in jail along the way, if you think it's not... I think the only valid way to say you don't want to go to jail is that you really don't think it has any use at all. I've never been convinced that anybody really meant that. I've always felt that they were just afraid to go to jail, you know, which makes perfectly good sense, that you don't like jail. But if you just don't want to spend 3 years locked up in jail, then I think you try to put the picture of that kid with a napalm in the chin again. And then you begin taking a little emphasis off, you know... You want to live and you want to see the sun every day and you want to do what you want to do and you want to go to the movies when you want to and you want to screw when you want to. And maybe if you're concerned enough about your brothers and sisters who are dying and starving, you'd be willing to give some of this stuff up.
Right. How can a person live his life positively he's locked away in jail? If he wants to live his life as a positive example of a sense of freedom or truth or anything, to make value in his life, man, if you agree to take
they're all juicy.
I mean, you're accepting this society. Maybe you feel it.
It's also saying that the only positive existence is a one that's physically healthy.
I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is you're taking
this. What you're saying is that
you're going to
go to jail. I don't want to go to jail. But I am saying that I know that if he's within himself, if he has that force, that those 3 years in jail won't be a loss.
Well, that could be true.
That those 3 years.
I'd say so too.
But how do you do that with a draft card? See, that if you can explain that to me, I will go get my draft card back.
Well, I see the draft card.
I'll explain it to you. First of all, jail is shit. I mean shit. I wouldn't want to go to jail.
Have you been?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Okay.
How long? Just curious.
A couple days.
Yeah, okay.
And that's shit. All right. I say this. If you're going to fight an enemy, I don't care if it's a soldier's enemy or a man with a rifle. Fight him or join him. If you fight him, you get a chance of getting a bullet in the head. If you join him, he's your friend. I'll tell you what I did. I joined the armed services, but I didn't go in. I filled out the application, went for a physical, took a few papers off the desk when the guy's back was turned, put them in my pocket. I got accepted and I never answered, never showed up.
Now you're a free man.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
What I say is this. It took a person a half hour, an hour, interview, it took a physical, it took people to process the application. It's using the system. If everybody did this, it would clog it up. If everybody went for an interview without chemicals instead of protesting it, you wouldn't have 10 people interviewing, you'd have 1,000 every chemical. They couldn't do it. You could also sign a contract and not show up. Just don't do it. You clog them up.
Yeah, like that.
If you don't want to go to jail, I'm saying. If you don't want to go to jail, like if you don't have a draft card, all right, you don't have to register for the draft. But if you have one already, if you don't want to go to jail, why not go up and try to clock the system up? Maybe they'll wind up spending too much money on it or something.
Whether you're going to put your life on the line or not, not with your papers, but your life and other people's lives.
Yeah, there's...
Mr. Harris, you have yet to explain why you can't do in the Army what you said you're going to do in jail.
It's a very simple explanation. In the Army, I have a gun in my hands.
No.
What? You don't have guns in your hands in the Army?
Imagination, man. Use your imagination.
Right.
You're in jail.
In your sense of humor, and my rifle. I'd say, obviously, I could do exactly what I'm now doing, in the Army, which is I'd end up in jail in the Army also. I'd say if you're not in the Army yet, don't go in, because there's nothing that much nicer about Army jail. What I'm doing is refusing the orders of that system. If you want to refuse those orders in the Army, then I suggest you go in the Army. They'll first shave your beard, and then you refuse orders, and then they'll put you in jail.
Just be more subtle, sir.
Which means?
I mean, pretend.
Answering questions when people stop asking them.
You want to go talk to other people, you have the opportunity all of your life. You came here tonight for a different purpose.
Catharsis.
Okay.
Did you come here for catharsis?
We didn't stop him. We'll hit you.
Just take your clothes off. Basic point that
I'm not a student here at Berkeley, which makes no difference at this particular time, but I know that the vast majority of people are. And probably a good number of you are going to school under your parents or some other means, came to Berkeley or whatever institution you may be going to. As a result, you have a certain status quo here in Canada. What we're getting away from is the fact that not the draft, or Mr. Harris or the gentleman over there as means of resisting the whole affair, the whole political machine in the United States, wherever the country may be, but the achievement of that thing, that world brotherhood, that value of life, and not an apathy toward the taking of another's life that we're missing here. It depends on what you as people want to sacrifice, what you personally want to sacrifice. That status quo, which you strive to maintain, how much of that you're willing to go and get away from in order to bring this value of human life to where it should have been a long time ago.
At this point, I would like to simply make a simple statement, which is to say that the problem that all of us in the resistance went through was the problem of having A, that value for human life, B, being faced with an institution that reflected absolutely none of that value and continues to destroy people's lives, and C, how to find a response, you know, to that system which really affirmed that first thing we began with. What we came up with was the idea of refusing to cooperate in any fashion. I just like to make that simple statement so people can remember that that is there and that, you know, that's why we were talking.
I think there's a problem in trying to choose between conscientious objection and non-cooperation that hasn't been mentioned. And that is that I think it's important not just to choose life, but to also to try to choose as best you can the quality of the life that you're going to lead, what kind of life that is. And there's a very serious problem that I see in non-cooperation in that it almost always will lead to jail, in that going to jail to me is not just a moral statement, it is also a very personal statement, in that I think it can often brutalize a person's nature in ways that even he cannot foresee at all when he goes in. And Dave, I went through 4 years of college with you, and I grant you a lot more thought on this matter and confidence on it than I do almost any other person. But I won't even grant you the sureness that after 3 years of jail, that your own personality and your own human nature will be very different, or perhaps be very different, and that you take the great risk that what it is when you go in. And I think that's the problem very much that you have to face up to, and that you essentially have to weigh that risk, which to me is very grave, with the fact that maybe, on the other hand, with conscientious objection, particularly if you do feel these religious motivations, that by accepting the values the system gives you, you still are able to work in the world, to choose life, and to also, for yourself and for the people around you, to choose the best quality of life that you can attain. And I'm very worried about the risks that you entail in going to jail.
Yeah. I think we would... I think we would all... I mean, I would admit to the existence of that risk. I think the danger is considering that risk of being brutalized as to be simply a function of jail. I mean, I find the same risk to be, you know, of being brutalized in the basic context of American society. I think it's a risk all of us take every day. I mean, the attempt to really maintain some kind of humanity in the face of the sheer brutalization that characterizes the society's day-to-day processes is difficult. I'm sure that difficulty will continue in jail. I'm not sure I will get, you know, that I will make it through it, or I will not be brutalized by it at all. I mean, to put that jail thing all in perspective, I can confess that I'm still very afraid of jail. You know, I mean, I still have trouble sleeping at night. I mean, and it's not something that you ever get over. It's always there. I mean, it's something you simply try and get on top of, and you try and deal with that situation as best you can deal with it. I did it because I found that the basic kind of brutalization, not simply of myself, but of all those people around me, that was conducted in the very informal and very unobvious fashion of cooperation with the Selective Service, seemed to me to be a much greater danger to my life and to the lives of everyone in the world, you know, than the danger of the brutalization of jail. I know people who've been brutalized by jails. I also know people who have not been, you know, and I think that's a risk all of us take. What I'm saying is that the stakes are high enough for people around the world that we have to take that risk, and that we're going to obviously have to help each other through that. I mean, we try and think of the resistance as really a community of people and recognize that everybody's going to need help. You know, the best known and the least known people need help. And we try and create a situation where it's possible for people to help each other through that. And, you know, I've got no final answer to that brutalization. It may happen. It just seems to me the stakes are high enough that the risk is worth it. The question was, what is the community I expect to derive support from? Inside the jail, the community is those people of common mind inside the jail. Outside of the jail, I really hope to have it from you. You know, and one of the ways we describe jail and the resistance is to quote an old Wobbly phrase, which is to say, I'm in for you, you're out for me. You know, and the support of me in jail, as far as I'm concerned, is a question of the people who are still outside of jail doing the work that I began. And that's the best way to support me. If that work goes on, I'll get energy from it. You know, and it's that kind of community. It's the community of people that we've been talking about all night who really have that basic kind of respect for people's lives and want to build those lives into a sacred institution. I think those people form the community. And I think our attempt has been to make that community consistently grow, and is grow as fast as we can make it grow. And that as people find expressions for that concern for the sanctity of men's lives, those expressions become acted out. And, you know, that's where I expect support, and that's the community I feel myself to be a part of.
You know, is it worth it as far as your life goes to have the possibility of spending the rest of the day?
Repeating.
Question. So how long am I going to play this jail thing? I mean, I do 3 years to get out, get busted again, do 3 more years, get out, get busted again, do 3 more years. Is that kind of price worth it? Well, my first reaction is to say that I'd rather play the jail game than play the draft game. I mean, that's the decision I made. You have to understand, deep down, at some point, I decided that I would much rather spend time in jail than spend time with a draft card. Not because carrying a draft card was harder. Carrying a draft card is obviously easier than spending time in jail. But the carrying of that draft card meant something that I could never live with. And I say, I'm just like you. I have no crystal ball. I do my jail terms one at a time. And, you know, when I finish the first one, and if there's a second one coming, then I'll deal with the second one. Maybe I'll split the second one. I don't know. I know I'm not splitting at the first one. And I know that none of us can hang ourselves up out in that future. I can't predict what will happen. I can act now. I can act in such a way as seems to me will make things happen that I would like to see happen. I mean, you just get to do it step by step. It's like everybody's concerned about how they're gonna die. And I say, you don't get to concern yourself with how you're gonna die. Nobody gets to answer that. All you get to answer is how you're gonna live. And I'm saying today, and yesterday, and what I guess tomorrow is gonna be, I've chosen to live without that draft card. That means I've also chosen, in some sense, to live 3 years of my life in jail.
You spoke a little bit before. Hey, come on, man. See, the thing is, so why don't you go do your non-jail thing? Why don't you just go do it?
You're
not going to convince him, you know.
Guy in the blue shirt.
The
guy in the light. The guy in the light blue shirt.
Okay, I think the main problem with this discussion is like a lot of people are setting up different ways to do it. Like you're saying that the draft game or the jail game is a decision that you have to make. But I think it's like every person in this room is making a decision. Resist the crap in whatever way you can. And I think that there's many decisions, many methods. There are people in this room, and I myself do not want to set up any methods by which I can do that.
Okay. I agree fully. I mean, I don't know how many times I have to say it, but I already recognize, you know, the sanctity of any man's decision. I might say what someone decides to do, you know, is what he decides to do, and I'm willing to, I mean, there's no less validity attached to somebody's life. All I've tried to say tonight is that I was faced with that same question as everyone else. I tried to deal with that question. I tried to find a response to that situation which really affirmed the things I wanted to affirm. And that's, you know, and that's what I came tonight and said, is how I decided I had to respond to that. And I'm not going to make any statement that it's the final and absolute thing. All I'm saying is that's the best thing I could figure out to do. As we try and answer that question of what decision we're going to make, I think one of the ways of answering it is to share with each other what we think, you know, what we think about that question. And that's all I've tried to do. I'm not trying to impose any action upon anyone.
Some people can be more effective in jail. Some people can be more effective out. I think that it would be better if people stayed out of jail and did social discussion on the outside. Their own lives.
No. But see, I think the problem of doing something constructive is not simply a problem of what the particular act that you do is. It's not just a question of whether you go and with your hands do something you consider to be constructive. The question of whether or not it's constructive, whether you like it or not, is unfortunately also a social question. It's a question of the context that you do that within. Granted, there are people in the United States Army today which do things that we would consider to be constructive, you know, in and of themselves. But they do them in a context which denies all the fact of their constructiveness. And that's, you know, that's all I've tried to say, is that...
How much more social that, would it be than going to jail? You know, you spoke before about the assumptions of the whole society, you know, based on politics and fear and all that business. Largely, I agree. All right, but I mean, if you go to jail, you accept, you know, you can do what you want with my body. I'm not going to cooperate with you in jail. That's your body you're talking about. If you don't have...
You're telling me. So you're telling me.
Communal effort that's going to stop conscription, stop murder, stop all these things. I want to know what, you know, as a woman, I can do in this communal effort. And in fact, so I want to direct the question to Joan. What I'd like to know is what you're going to do in terms of self-sacrifice, because I think that's what his action is, in the good, you know, bad side of all sense of the word. What can you do? You know, I mean,
okay.
We can.
Well, actually, you can if you really want to. She's saying, what can, her question is really what, you know, what can a woman do? What can females do? And also about self-sacrifice, you don't look at it that way. I mean, if you jump into that mainstream of life I was talking about, it's not a big sacrifice. You know, it begins to be the one. It's what you really love. You know, it's really what you love to do. And in a sense, jail, you know, jail is a sacrifice, but it would be a much bigger sacrifice for David to have to live his life carrying a draft card around. You know, so if you look at it on the side of joy rather than the side of self-sacrifice, it's a good beginning. Two, I think, hey, give me a chance, please, huh? Thank you. I think it's very important that the word has to be spread. I mean, I think we should recognize that between 80 and 100% of the young people in this nation have never heard of draft resistance. So you could fill up, you know, your week for the next X number of years just going around and talking to people about it. I think that's very important. I think women can and should sign the complicity statement and make a public thing out of it, you know, make some kind of program out of it. And I think that you can aid and abet. The other night, a guy came up to me at a draft card turn-in and said, "Would you do me the honor?" and handed me his card. You know, while I would hold it while he burned it. Well, I was absolutely overjoyed. It was like looking at my first Christmas tree, you know. And the women really, excuse me, David, but hold together the resistance in the back rooms on the typewriters and the stamp licking and all that stuff that goes on. I mean, there's plenty for you to do. Lastly, I would just like to say that I don't think any woman should go to bed with a man who carries a draft card.
You based your draft resistance on this nation state's participation in a military war, or, you know, having a military strike. I know of nation states which do not have conscription. I know of some nation states which don't maintain an armed force. I know of no nation state which does not maintain jails. The jail is a much more endemic part of the nation state than even the army. When you use your logic to resist the army and an armed force on the grounds that you're carrying a card that's an easily observable symbol, they may someday get a conscription service without draft cards. That's exactly what jail is. You don't have to carry a card to go to jail. You assented to that by being a United States citizen. By being born. And they enforce that assent, and they're enforcing it on you. And I think it's part of your job is to take ways to get out of jail, too.
Look, yeah, I agree. I mean, the one thing I dislike about the discussion is that I'm put in the position of defending jail. I mean, I think as the man who's about to go to jail, I ought to be the last one who had to defend it. You know, I don't defend jails. I don't think jails are good things. In the society I want to live in, there's no such thing as a jail. Look, if they made it a question of me walking into that jail, then I wouldn't go into that jail. I'd go to jail because of what I said. There are a given number of alternatives of my response in the situation. I find all the other responses to be much more categorically building, you know, the nation state and that set of assumptions and that logic that it is than the fact I'm going to jail. And I say, another thing you consider about jail is how you behave in that jail. It makes a great deal of difference of what the nature of jail is. You know, that jail too is a set of social roles. You know, the prisoners act like prisoners and the guards act like guards. And let me tell one more jail story, which is from the last time I was in jail about a year ago. In a place probably everyone is at least name-wise familiar with, which is Santa Rita Rehabilitation Center.
Yay.
You know, which is the great euphemism for Alameda County Jail. And I was there out of a demonstration. There are about 90 of us kept in a thing called a compound, which is like a solid U of buildings with a link wire fence across the front top with barbed wire. And there's in the middle of the compound is a courtyard with, you know, basketball courts painted on it, the whole gig. And so it was like October, and it was sunny. So one of the things people did was like sunbathe. You know, the guards would walk by, and there'd be like 30 naked men lying out in the middle of this compound. And, you know, they're all trying to kind of get brown. And the guards always go, oh, wow, because half of them were like doing yoga. You know, so they kind of, sort of all wrapped around themselves. And one day there's a guard on duty who didn't particularly like us. And, you know, he walked by and he saw a couple guys kicking a basketball around, you know, playing soccer with it. He says, hey, stop kicking that basketball. And they say, okay, too much. We'll stop kicking the basketball. So they leave it there. And a little while later, he walks by again and there are two other guys who didn't hear anything of what he'd said kicking the basketball. He said, hey, I told you guys to stop kicking that basketball. He says, throw it over the fence to me. So they throw it over the fence to him, and he lays it down on the ground right outside the fence and walks down the road about 20 yards, waiting for people to jump the fence and get the basketball. Well, nobody jumps the fence. So after a while, he strolls back. He strolls back to the gate, which is where everybody in jail, like, hangs out. You know, it's kind of where it's happening. And you know, there are lots of cats hanging around in jail, and he starts rapping with them. Then some guy comes up who didn't know what the hell was happening, and he sees a basketball. He says, hey, why don't you give us our basketball back? At that point, the guard really lost his cool and got really pissed. He looks around, and there in the compound are all these naked guys. And he says, get your clothes back on. He says, you can't do that, you know. He goes stomping into the compound. And he runs up to him and he says, look, if you don't get your clothes back on, I'm going to send you to Greystone. You know, Greystone is the big threat. It's maximum security. It's the hole, you know. It's the thing. He says, you know, get your clothes back on or it's Greystone. And these guys look up and they say, wow, Greystone. Man, we haven't been to Greystone yet. 2 months. Greystone. We all get to go to Greystone. 90 guys line up the gate saying, wow, everybody, we get to go to Greystone, 2 months. Hey. And this guard, he kind of looks around, you know, and he runs down and gets the captain, and there's this big summit conference, and, you know, we agreed to wear pants, and the whole thing blew over. But, you know, I think it's possible to say that in a jail, that you really break down the whole operation of that jail when you begin to act like a free man. You know, and I don't claim that jail is freedom. I just say that jail is one step freer than carrying a draft card. I mean, my experience of both jail and carrying a draft card is that I'd rather be in jail than carry the draft card, because I'd at least rather have somebody else guard me than myself. I mean, it seems to me that the epitome of unfreedom to be your own guard. The one step beyond that is to make somebody else your guard. I hope we get to a world where we don't have to have guards at all. But, you know, the way I see of getting out of it is I'm putting myself in a position to have somebody guard me.
Still a little confused about why you don't want people to become conscientious objectors. Why is it wrong to go along with the system? this way, that is, what is the bad thing that you're doing, and that is it so bad that it will counteract something that you might do as a CEO, that is, help the resistance out there?
Yeah, I think I'd try and answer. Did you finish? Did I cut you off? I'd try and answer the question with one answer. I mean, both questions, which is, it seems to me, as you accept the position of being a conscientious objector, you also accept the validity of their orders making you a conscientious objector. That A, that they have the right to declare the nature of your conscientiousness or non-conscientiousness. B, they have the right to declare the various natures of various men and control the expressions of those natures. And that by participating in the system, you are accepting its existence. And I'd say that I found that the reasons I'd be a conscientious objector were contradicted by the existence of the system itself. And we said, I heard it said best this morning at the high school conference, where a guy said that he was not only a conscientious objector to war, he was also a conscientious objector to conscription. And I mean, that's a position I find myself to be in. And I see that you really build that system by participating in it and accepting any of the classifications it might give to you. And I think ultimately the work you would do as a conscientious objector will be destroyed by exactly those forces that you endorse by accepting the classification.
Well, this is like, perhaps I'm misunderstanding your argument, but it sounds as if you're saying as if you're just speaking to the immorality of conscription and not to the immorality of a volunteer army.
Okay, I'll speak to that question. As far as I'm concerned, that volunteer army does exactly the same thing, as a conscripted army. I mean, it's not conscription, but the functions of armies remains the same, whether it's done by mercenaries or slaves. Conscription helps the army, is my point.
Yes.
I mean, being a CO builds conscription. Conscription builds the army.
Yes, but you build an army in other ways.
Right. All I'm saying is that the present army is built in this fashion. And so I see the way to get at destroying the present army is through that mechanism of conscription.
But you see, you're not,
it's not because I don't really understand what the question is.
What would you do to destroy a volunteer army?
The question was, what would I do to destroy a volunteer army? One of the things I'd do is refuse to pay that whole percentage of my taxes which goes to that volunteer army. I think I'll probably deal with that situation when I'm faced with it, like the rest of it. I don't know exactly what I would do if it were a volunteer army.
The problem is just, why are you condemning COs? And always your argument seems to be that you should take them as CO because you're CO. As a CO, you can, you're helping conscription. And as I say, conscription isn't bad. The army is bad. And surely are.
But see, I
can,
at this.
Okay. Can I try just for a fresh outlook? I think he said lots of different things, and one of the things that he said a few times this evening is that the people get bound up in the content of what they're doing, but not the context of it. And the context of being a CO negates the content of whatever good thing you might be doing as a CEO. I mean, he said it this evening, and it's another way to answer it, which may make it clearer. And that doesn't say anything about conscription. It just says that you're getting pushed around by a system you don't want to be pushed around by.
Okay, I would be going along with the system, but I would only be going along with certain parts of it, and certain parts which aren't very innocuous. Which are very innocuous. Are very important parts. But if I become a CO, then I can then I can stay out of jail, and I can continue to work for peace.
Let me just try. Hey, can I try one fresh approach? And that would be, I think what a draft board should be set up for. I think a draft board should be there so that when you go, you have to prove why it is you want to take part in the selective service system. I mean, you go and give them proof, whether it's three lines or a page or what, you tell them why it is you want to wear a uniform and why it is you want to kill. And that's what it should be.
We need to do a couple more questions.
Well, I
I'd like to say a different alternative to say I'm going to go to jail. Say sort of cross between underground and going to jail. Saying ignoring the whole city, just living, you know, living free and living, being yourself, and talking and doing, you know, being in resistance to everything. But saying there's a possibility that I may go to jail, but they're going to have to take me.
Yeah. Well, I think I've tried to say that tonight. I mean, the question was potentially about attitudes toward jail. We're at ought not to talk about it as though what it was going to jail. You know, that you say when time for jail comes, they're going to have to take you to jail. I think I've tried to say that in as many ways as I could. You know, I don't define what I'm doing as going to jail. I define what I'm doing as refusing to cooperate with the draft. One of the consequences of that is going to jail. I don't like that consequence. I think the consequence is there, and I face it. My life is trying to build those things that we've been talking about. I mean, to do that means I have to be open and public and build those the way I can. One of the ways I found to build those is to talk to people. So I intend to spend my life talking to people. I'm going to spend that life talking to people until the time comes where I'm going to be taken away and sent to jail. And when I'm in jail, I'm going to talk to those people. I'm going to try and build it every way I know how to build it.
What if the penalty for resisting the draft was 50 years? Would you go to jail then? You can get out. Right?
I don't know what I would do if the penalty was 50 years.
You got to think about that.
Okay, I'll think about it. I would simply like to announce that those people who are interested in returning their draft cards to the government and refusing to cooperate with conscription, the resistance is going to have its fourth national day of non-cooperation around the country on November 14th. We'll welcome anybody who wants to get rid of his draft card, whether it's a real draft card or a fake draft card. You know, we'll even take your social security number and your driver's license if you want to get rid of those too. But there'll be demonstration 2:30 in the afternoon at the Federal Building in San Francisco for all of you people that are interested on November 14th. Also, before people go to the Federal Building with the draft cards at 12 o'clock noon here on Sproul Hall steps on the 14th, there'll be a draft card turn-in. Thank you very much.